Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, December 28th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 15 minutes, I'd say, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me for what I usually call our Thursday meeting show. Only one of our two regular guests joining us here today. That is the great Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. In place of Rolf Michaels here on today's show, we'll bring a new guest on. He is at @whale_capper on Twitter. Great handicapper when it comes to the NBA, NFL, and tennis. We're going to talk NFL and NBA with him on today's show. So good to get some new blood on the program here as we inch closer to the start of 2018. Of course, just two shows left here of Bang the Book Radio for 2017. Tomorrow we'll have the final Westgate Super Contest selection segment with my Week 17 picks. Then also Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report. Over at bangthebook.com, tons of great stuff going on. All of the remaining bowl games have picks and preview articles. Four of them here today, five tomorrow, four on Saturday, five on Monday. And then, of course, once we know the matchup, we'll write up a preview for the national championship game as well. All Week 17 NFL games have been previewed. Power ratings articles, situational betting articles, all sorts of great informational stuff over there for you at bangthebook.com. Sign up for those free contests as well. Just give us your email address. You can win cash prizes in those. Check out our sportsbook reviews as well. See if you can find one that works for you. DSI is still dealing that BTB25 promo code with a $25 free bet just for signing up. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook and 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well. But check out the sportsbook reviews that we have over there. See what works best for you. And always remember that bangthebook.com is your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Two guests coming your way here on today's program. The first, the great Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, brother?
Well, I don't know about great, but I appreciate the fabulous intro there. And I hope everyone had a very Merry Christmas and enjoying the holiday season.
I got to say, there are a lot of people out there that follow me on Twitter that listen to the show, and they know that I like to subscribe to the shit-talking theory, which is basically you talk shit about something and the opposite happens. Kudos to you for employing that with Kansas State the other night.
Yeah, it's the old reverse psychology, and guys that have been longtime followers of me probably on Twitter, and I don't do it too often, but if you're looking for a trend, whenever I do that at a halftime or something of a game, chances are I usually come back and win that ticket. I would guess at least two-thirds of the time, if not more. And I think I even had a couple of Twitter guys hit me and say it's a 70% trend, and it has been over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. But, you know, that was just frustration. You know, UCLA up 17-7. I have a Kansas State minus 2.5 ticket. They close, 6.5? And when you're beating the market by 4 points and you're down, you know, still failing to cover by double digits at that time, that was a little bit of frustration there at halftime. But kudos to the Hall of Famer, Bill Snyder. Made some adjustments. The interim coach for UCLA didn't, and it ended up being an easy winner.
All right. Well, again, you don't want to overuse that, though. You don't want to let the magic run out. You want to save that for the spots where you really need it. And that was one of them. And for any of our listeners that hopped out in front of that line move, got that 2.5 that was out there, you know, prior to the Josh Rosen announcement, that was something that we talked about on the show. So, you know, again, maybe it wasn't a true position for you, but it made a lot of sense because if Josh Rosen came out and said he wasn't playing, that line was going to move. Well, move it did, and obviously it worked out in Kansas State's favor, who wound up covering the adjusted number anyway. But still, you know, it was a savvy move that we talked about here on the show to get out in front of that adjustment. And, you know, kudos to anybody that hopped on that one. So we'll see what we're looking at here for these 9 bowl games that we're going to talk about today. Beginning on Saturday, game 257-258, the Tax Slayer Bowl down in Jacksonville, between Louisville and Mississippi State. Very, very interesting spot here for the Bulldogs. You know, SEC team played very well against Alabama a couple of weeks ago, but no Nick Fitzgerald, no Dan Mullen. We saw a wave of action on this game at the open where Louisville was -5, 6.5, 7 out there across the market. Brad, are you surprised that we haven't seen anyone else piggyback that initial move?
You know, from a pure power ratings, I get why the line hasn't jumped anymore. I mean, I have nothing to hide. Louisville's probably one of the biggest bets I've had all season long. I was part of that initial move, and you know, when the time comes, I'll post that ticket as we get closer to game time. I just think it's a terrible spot for Mississippi State. And not only Dan Mullen and the quarterback away, but they're also playing without both coordinators here. I liked how Louisville finished up this season. They were just 5-4. They won and covered their last three games. I think Lamar Jackson, obviously, and I think there might have been some holdout to see if he would play or not. I think he's going to play. He's got something to prove, just like maybe Josh Allen for Wyoming. He's not getting all the love that a Josh Rosen or a Sam Darnold's getting. So actually one more data point and him going out there and playing and having a good performance would be good for his draft stock. Big coaching mismatch. You got Petrino coaching in his 11th bowl game. They got an interim coach on the other side, Mississippi State, and Greg Knox. Lamar Jackson, to me, had just as good a season as what he had last year. The problem was he had a terrible bowl game. I think he's got a little bit of a revenge mode there. I just think Mississippi State playing without their best player and the entire coaching staff is really up against it here. I like Louisville, bet him at -5. Again, one of my bigger bets of the entire season. And, you know, as long as you can still get a 6.5 shop around, you might have to lay the 115 to get it. I think it's still a really good play.
Yeah, and this is one of those where it's definitely important to have multiple sports books at your disposal. You've got some places that are 6.5 -15. You've got some that are 6.5 -18. Couple of books out there on the 7, including Bovada. So Louisville is a little bit of a public side here in this game, but that's not a big surprise at all because of the situations with Mississippi State, because you've got a big-time playmaker like Lamar Jackson. And this is even a larger-scale example of what we talked about I don't know if it was last week or 2 weeks ago on the show. Quarterbacks like Mike White, like Quentin Flowers, you know, those senior guys that are going out there and playing their last games. And you know, for Lamar Jackson here, like you said, there's something for this kid to prove. There's something for him to go out there and do in this game coming off of a Heisman Trophy season last year. I know he's not a senior, but he's going to make the jump to the NFL. He should. And you kind of wonder, you know, how he gets evaluated from this bowl game and from what he does in the combine. We know that NFL scouts love to fall in love with those measurables and those 40 times and all that type of stuff. Lamar Jackson's a big kid, a fast kid, a strong kid. You know, I think a lot of people just don't expect what he did in college to translate to the NFL. A lot of people probably didn't expect that with Russell Wilson either. That's not to say Lamar Jackson's going to become Russell Wilson, but, you know, it is in his best interest to go out here, play a good game, show well in the combine. You know, so, I mean, this is a guy with a lot to prove, and a lot of times the teams feed off of that as well.
Yeah, they absolutely do, and look, maybe he doesn't translate to the next level when it comes to the quarterback spot, but you're right. He's a big, lengthy kid, you know, shows great maneuverability, has a quick burst, has long legs. You know, him in different packages, I think, look, I'm not selling him as a first-round, buying him as a first-round draft pick or anything like that, but, you know, he's the type of player you haven't heard with all the attention he's gotten over the last year and a half or so. He hasn't, you know, pretty much kept his nose clean. You haven't heard any drama whatsoever with him. I thought he's handled the spotlight quite well. And again, I thought he improved in the passing game this year, showed some improvement there. You know, I don't think he has anything proved to come back for another season. So, you know, he's a guy that's probably going to be drafted second, third round, but more of an athlete than a quarterback. And I think because last year's bowl game against LSU was such a terrible performance, I think there's a little bit of a chip on their shoulder here. And I think they're actually motivated to finish this one outright, unlike what they did last year as they faltered down the stretch.
All right, let's go to the Liberty Bowl here, sponsored by AutoZone. Game 259-260. Iowa State takes on Memphis. Really, really intriguing game here. You've got an Iowa State team that, you know, Matt Campbell's done a phenomenal job with them. They overachieved. They picked up a couple of really big wins this year, beating Oklahoma, beating TCU. You know, those are two signature hallmark wins for this program. I know they only went 7-5, but you know, they had those two big scalps there. They have to go to Memphis, where the Tigers are virtually going to play a home game. Memphis, a 10-win team, a team that had a very, very good season. Mike Norvell signs an extension there with them. They fell short against Central Florida, but they've had a lot of time to let that loss kind of digest here. So Memphis is a 3.5, 4-point favorite, depending on where you look. You probably got a 1.5 to 2 points here of home field advantage, maybe 2.5 if you really want to get aggressive with it. What do you think about this line? What do you think about this matchup?
Yeah, I lean with Iowa State here plus the points. And you used the word matchup, and I think that's the edge that Iowa State has here. I mean, they've already seen several high-powered Big 12 offenses shut them down. They only allow 21 points per game, so the strength of the team is their defense. You can't say the same thing on the other side. Memphis, the number 120 total defense in the entire country. So I think matchup-wise, it kind of reminds me of Texas's defense against Missouri. Look, Missouri's offense performed quite well against SEC teams that weren't used to seeing it, but we saw Texas, a Big 12 team that sees that offense each and every week and be able to shut down Missouri, and I think that might be the case again here. You also look, you know, Iowa State 8-2-2 against the number. Even after they pulled that big outright upset against Oklahoma, they continue to be a little bit of a point spread darling there. And they don't turn the football over. I mean, they're the only team in the country that hasn't lost a fumble this entire season. Now, I hope I don't jinx them in that regard, but when you're taking care of the football, you're playing defense, that's usually a couple of good recipes to having some success. And them getting the hook here, I think, is the play. Cyclones plus 3.5 is the pick for me.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting because you've got this Memphis team that, I mean, they put up numbers, and they did it on pretty much everybody. They scored 70 points twice in a game this season, once against UConn, once against East Carolina. Say what you will about UConn and East Carolina, but if you can hang 70 on somebody, that's pretty damn impressive. Now, they do lose offensive coordinator Daryl Dickey to Texas A&M. I don't think that necessarily has too big of an impact here on this one. But you've got another guy here in Riley Ferguson who, you know, again, something to prove, wants to go out there, have a good game, show what he could do for the scouts, a big kid at 6'4". So, you know, another guy that has something, you know, something extra besides the bowl game, some additional motivation here. Same thing with wide receiver Anthony Miller as well, a guy with 92 catches this year. He needs 8 to get to 100. You know they'll look for him early and often. But what Matt Campbell has done with the Cyclones, I think, is so impressive. And now you've got a guy with a team that's buying in. And you know, if you had a middle-of-the-road Big 12 team, somebody else like a West Virginia or like a Texas Tech, something like that, and they're playing a team like Memphis, maybe it doesn't get them all that excited. But for Iowa State to go to a bowl game, have a chance to knock off a top 25 team in what amounts to virtually a road game, that means a lot more to this program than it would to other programs in that middle tier of the Big 12. So I think Iowa State is highly, highly motivated here too.
That's an excellent point and a great comparison. You're exactly right. Had it been, you know, other middling Power 5 teams, I think Memphis would have been the play. They're going to be excited playing in front of their home crowd, and they've done quite well in front of their home crowd this year. First time that they've ever finished a season perfect straight up at home. And the Liberty Bowl's been around a while, since 1960. So but I just think Iowa State, first bowl game for them in 5 or 6 years. They'll be excited to be there. They'll bring a large contingent of fans. And I think another thing I didn't emphasize here, Memphis, I would not award them the full home field, even though they're playing in front of their home stadium. It's not like they'll have an overwhelming crowd support here. I bet Iowa State will have quite a large contingent of fans in the crowd. So that's one where maybe Memphis normally gets a 3, 3.5 home field advantage. You're exactly right. 2, 2.5 is what you should award it. And I'm not necessarily sure that the market's properly accounting for that. So a highly motivated team with a better defense that takes care of the football sounds like a good recipe for me. And I'd probably shade in a little bit of the money line here on the Cyclones.
All right, let's go out to Glendale for the PlayStation Fiesta Bowl game, 261-262, Washington and Penn State. This has the chance to be a pretty good game here. Penn State favored by 1.5 or 2 points, depending on where you look. Bovada, the highest line out there at 3. So it certainly looks like Penn State, the public side here in this one. Haven't seen a whole lot of sharp involvement on either side in this game. Brad, what do you think about this one?
I think the sharps are going to be on Washington here because, I mean, the public side, definitely Penn State, and, you know, the line's creeping down, and it hasn't had, you know, any want to go to full 3 here, and it's come down to like 1.5, and some of your Pinnacle's dealing a 1.5 with reduced juice here. So I do think the sharper side's Washington. Two very similar teams. You start breaking down, both to have really good defenses. Both teams, you know, had season win totals right around 10. They met those expectations. They came up just short, losing a couple of close road games, each of them. The issue I have with back in Washington, they only played two bowl teams away from home. They lost both games outright to Arizona State. Stanford failed to cover the spread by 38 points in those two games. On the flip side, I got a little bit of concern with the fact that Joe Moorhead's gone for Penn State. And I think people forget James Franklin was on the hot seat last year. And he made a great hire in Joe Moorhead. Once that offense got going the middle of last season, they haven't looked back. But with him off the Mississippi State, I'm a little bit concerned. But then again, Washington also lost their offense coordinator, Jonathan Smith, to Oregon State. Both teams' top-notch defenses. Washington's number one in the country in rush defense. A tough call for me, but I just think Penn State's got the better playmakers here. I'm leaning with the Nittany Lions minus the points, but it's definitely not a game where I'm going to get too heavily involved in.
That Moorhead angle is something that I'm really glad you pointed out, because if you didn't do it, I was going to do it. I mean, like you said, James Franklin was on the hot seat. I mean, this is a guy that very well could be coaching somewhere else right now if he hadn't made that hire of Joe Moorhead. And I've talked about this before on the show. I've liked what I've heard from James Franklin. I heard an interview on XM from him over the summer talking about, you know, the Moorhead hire and about how he handles his program. And then I mentioned right here on the show, you know, about the game against Ohio State where Penn State's in control. Guy takes a dumb 15-yarder for a late hit. Franklin sits him down, talks to him man-to-man as opposed to embarrassing him. I think Franklin is good in that respect. I think he's going to have his team focused and ready to go. The problem is, I don't know how good of a head coach this guy is. I think he's okay on the defensive side, but offensively, Penn State was a train wreck until Joe Moorhead showed up. Now, they won't change too much, obviously, with Moorhead gone, but I'd worry a lot about Penn State next year, not just because they're going to lose Saquon Barkley and all the talent and some of the talented wide receivers that they have, but because I just don't know what kind of coach this guy is. On the other side, I know exactly what kind of coach Chris Peterson is, and that's a really damn good one. So I think a coaching advantage probably goes to Washington here, but I agree with you that I think from a talent standpoint, especially with Washington's injury problems, Penn State is the more talented team. So I guess this is kind of a matchup of do you prefer the coach or do you prefer the player personnel? And then you kind of apply your thoughts that way.
Yeah, and boy, as we talk through it here, with both teams losing their offense corners, both teams having solid defenses, and this is why I like doing shows and breaking down games, I can kind of, you know, thinking about it analytically and just, you know, talking through my handicap here, you know, I forget Penn State for me. And I mean, I still lean with them a little bit here, but as we do this, I'm leaning more towards the under. Obviously, you also have both teams that haven't played since the last week of November. And as you get later in bowl season, a lot of times the offenses, you know, when it comes to timing, and that with offenses in college football, the later bowl games tend to go under. The early ones, they tend to go over. I'm leaning more towards the under here now at 55. If I'm going to get involved right now, I'm going to go under the total. But you broke it down. Coaching edge is the Chris Peterson here. But, you know, how much when it comes to just one game, I don't know necessarily if it's going to really show up for Penn State. I mean, the guy that they promoted to offense coordinator has been on staff, so – and obviously they got a veteran group there with Barkley and McSorley. If it's going to really show up, it's going to be at the start of next year. And you're exactly right. As I start to look at 2018, Penn State is definitely a team I've circled and a team that I want to fade and sell next year.
All right, let's move on to the Orange Bowl here, the Capital One Orange Bowl down in Miami. So the Hurricanes obviously don't really have very far to go for this one. They take on Wisconsin, this number, now Wisconsin minus 4.5. And I got to admit here, Brad, I am kicking myself very hard this morning with the holidays, with everything else going on. You know, maybe haven't been paying as much attention to the odds screen as I should. I wish I had picked up on this one at 6 or 6.5 where it opened. Now that it's down to 4.5, I like it quite a bit less. But this is one of those games to me where, I mean, maybe Wisconsin does win the game and maybe Wisconsin looks dominant and the doubters of the Miami Hurricanes are, you know, are validated. But I just don't see a Wisconsin team capable of going out there to Miami and winning this game comfortably.
I completely agree. And if you're you know, a subscriber to my newsletter, you'll see that I got involved on Miami. I got a +7 ticket from down at the Tropicana. And the money, and that is was definitely pro money that showed up, yeah, especially 3-4 days prior out to the game, showed up on Miami. Correct line movement there. I like the matchup here for the Hurricanes. Look, I'm not even giving them close to home field advantage. It wouldn't be a bit surprised to me to see a 50-50 crowd split in this one, but you got to award a couple points the fact that they're sleeping at home, and you know they're very familiar with the setting there. Wisconsin's making their first ever appearance to the Orange Bowl, and obviously South Beach and everything down there can offer up a little bit of distractions. Mark Richt, whether you like him or you don't, he's actually one of the better bowl coaches. I mean, you see a lot of bowl coaches. Heck, even Nick Saban's barely above 500 when it comes to bowl games. Mark Richt's 10-5 straight up, 9-6 against the number. I like, you know, buying them because they're at their lowest point of the season off a couple of losses. The matchup that I really like is, you know, Alex Hornibrook of Wisconsin, his propensity to throw interceptions, 15 of them this year against that ball-hawking Miami-Florida defense with the turnover chain, you know, forcing the second most turnovers in the country this year. I think that's a bad spot for Wisconsin. I think Miami's speed on the defensive side of the ball, particularly the front seven there, is a good matchup against Wisconsin's offense. We saw Wisconsin struggle with the speed of Ohio State. So, you know, I still think that at 4.5, I still think Miami's a solid bet. Obviously, 6, 6.5, 7 was much preferred. But I don't think Wisconsin's capable of getting separation here. Hurricanes one of my favorite bowl picks of the year.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, I mean, I'd still even play this one at 4.5. And I'd also, you know, sprinkle the money line here for this game as well. I mean, this is something we talked about with Wisconsin throughout the year. And it was really hard to power rate Wisconsin because you had to have them high. You had to put them in a position where, you know, their lines reflected what you were going to see in the market because they played a terrible schedule. You look at Iowa, who they beat 38-14, one of their three games against the top 25 opponent this year. Iowa just had 200 yards against Boston College in the Pinstripe Bowl. Now, they won the game, but they looked putrid on offense. Michigan, you know, we know that they're not a particularly good offense either, and Wisconsin won that game 24-10. Played right with Ohio State, but Ohio State's kind of got that knack here over the last couple of years of, you know, really not playing up to its ceiling, and they certainly didn't do that in the Big Ten championship game either. Not to take anything away from Wisconsin, who played very well in that game, but Ohio State was some JT Barrett missed throws away from turning that thing into a complete runaway. So I'm just not impressed with Wisconsin's body of work at all. I know they went 12-1. Yeah, they beat Florida Atlantic early on in the year when Florida Atlantic wasn't quite the Owls team that we came to know. Yeah, they beat Northwestern at home. They beat Purdue, who just beat Arizona in the Foster Farms Bowl. That's all great, but they're taking on a legitimate top 5 team now with a top 10 defense. I don't see how Wisconsin's, you know, able to have too much success in this game. And Mark Richt has a massive coaching advantage here, too.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, Wisconsin's, you know, paper tiger schedule. Double-digit favorite, 11 of their 12 regular season games. You mentioned the Iowa game. That was a good spot for them. They're catching Iowa off. It is a massive upset over Ohio State, or at least close in there where Iowa was a little bit of flat there. The Michigan game, Michigan was outplaying Wisconsin. Brandon Peters gets hurt in that game, and Michigan was dead in the water. Michigan might have beaten them outright had Peters not gotten hurt in that game, and you're exactly right. Ohio State, well, you know, JT Barrett can just make a couple of throws. That's a double-digit loss for Wisconsin. And, you know, on the flip side, Miami, look, I haven't loved from them, and they, you know, statistically aren't a dominant team. But if there's two games where they really stepped up, both games at home, both prime time, that was against Virginia Tech and Notre Dame where they really showed their ceiling there. They have a higher ceiling. If they play their A game, you're exactly right. Forget the plus 4.5. You're going to have to, you know, put a little bit and shade a little and sprinkle a little bit of money line on Miami because that wouldn't be stunning. They just won the game outright.
All right, let's go to New Year's Day here as we kick off 2018 with South Carolina taking on Michigan in the Outback Bowl. Gamecocks catching 7.5 here against a Michigan team that, you know, didn't really live up to expectations and really hasn't during the Harbaugh tenure. What do you think about this line, this number?
Yeah, I'm not going to get too involved here, but, you know, if you're just looking at the total here, and it's a very low number sitting at 43, it's tough to lay more than a touchdown here. I guess the dynamic that I'm not fully grasping is how much is Brandon Peters worth, because Michigan was a better football team with him behind center. He didn't turn the football over, through zero picks, had four touchdowns. John O'Korn was a mess, two touchdowns, six interceptions. South Carolina appropriately fired their offense coordinator after the season, but they're going against the number three defense in the country. That's not ideal. South Carolina 6-1 against the spread as an underdog this year, four outright upsets. boy, Michigan only had one win over a bowl team all year. I really wanted to fade both teams in bowl season so far. I'm not going to get too heavily involved with, but if you're looking for a lean for me, I'm leaning with South Carolina plus the 7.5, getting the extra touchdown. But, man, if Peters is healthy and he's the difference in that Michigan offense, I could be sitting on a losing ticket there.
I think the firing of Kurt Roper was the best thing to happen to the South Carolina program since Steve Spurrier stepped down. And I love Steve Spurrier. I mean, he's my Twitter avatar for a reason. But the guy just – he wasn't getting it done from a recruiting standpoint anymore. I have some friends down in South Carolina. They're in the athletic department. I've heard some things about him, you know, just skipping out on recruit visits and all that type of thing that really hurt, you know, some of the players that the program was able to get. Now you've got Will Muschamp there, who's a brilliant defensive mind. I was absolutely fascinated by him when I watched him on the coach's film room for the college football playoff national championship game a couple of years ago. I think this team's going to be ready to play defensively, especially after what happened in last year's Birmingham Bowl against South Florida, which just became a massive shootout. The great unknown here is that Brian McClendon, the interim offensive coordinator, still has a chance at the job. Now, he probably won't get it, but he's auditioning for it here in this game. So what does he do? You've got a mobile quarterback in Jake Bentley, a guy I've likened to Connor Shaw with more arm talent. You've got a guy that can move around a little bit. Maybe that helps against a good Michigan defense. But South Carolina just doesn't have skill position talent right now. That's something that they really need to find a way to build up. So I don't know how much success they have. I think Muschamp's defense is ready to go. Low total, but I'd have to look at the under here. And then by proxy, I'd have to look at catching 7.5 with South Carolina, because if this is a low scoring game, you know, then certainly you'd want to take the points in that situation.
Yeah. And I never am wanting to propose teasers in college football. I think it's a losing measure just because there's higher variance, and there's particularly much higher variance when it comes to bowl games. We've seen that definitely this bowl season so far, but, and I'm not saying, you know, a bigger ticket on January 1st, but if you got to get involved, I think, you know, a teaser on the under in South Carolina is not a bad way to go, because this is one where I don't particularly see a lot of high variance. I expect a lower scoring game, and I expect, but if there's two units that are going to show up here without any question marks, it is the South Carolina defense and it is the Michigan defense. So I could see a teaser on South Carolina, and the under is probably what I'll end up betting on the game. Not one of my bigger bets, but, you know, I'm a college football junkie, and, you know, I have a little degenerate in me when it comes to gambling these bowl games. That's what I'll end up playing in that one.
I'm not a teaser guy in college football either, but when you look at this Saturday through Monday slate, Louisville down around a pick 'em, Miami over 10 at 10.5, and then maybe a South Carolina, Michigan under, or South Carolina up to 13.5 or 14, maybe not the worst look in the world. Again, I don't love teasers. Well, you're talking about games that have some lower totals here. You can do some things like that, and, you know, maybe that is something that does wind up having a little bit of success. Again, it's not the optimal way to play it by any means, because college football is a higher variance league than the NFL. But you do have some options out there if you are a little bit worried, you know, about laying some of the straight numbers that are out there. All right, let's go to the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. This is a fascinating game. Central Florida takes out Auburn. We all know Scott Frost moving on after this game, but he has been given the opportunity to round out the perfect season for Central Florida. Auburn had a chance to get to the college football playoff by beating Georgia. Couldn't do it. They find themselves in Atlanta for the Peach Bowl here against a group of five team, a very good one, but still a group of five team. They're favored by 9.5 or 10. What do you think about this one, Brad?
Well, it all comes down to motivation. I think Central Florida will have it. I mean, I think they're super excited about Scott Frost continuing to coach the game. And you even see players from other programs respecting that Scott Frost is staying on to coach the game. Now, he's had to split up his time, and that is a negative, the fact that he hasn't put 100% full effort into the game planning. He's had to recruit with an early signing period for Nebraska. But I think motivation-wise, Central Florida couldn't be more thrilled. Fan base is thrilled. They sold out of their ticket allotment almost immediately. On the flip side, how excited is Auburn? They just got done playing in this stadium for the SEC championship game, one game short of making the college football playoff. And you look at how these group of five teams, and you count the former Big East Conference, how they played in major bowls here. The last 19 times, the group of five schools have gone 13-6 straight up. despite being an underdog in 16 of those games. And obviously included in one of those was Central Florida's huge upset win over Baylor in the Fiesta Bowl. Man, I'm going to wait for and see if I can get a 10 out here, but I'm definitely leaning with Central Florida plus the points.
That is the big question for Auburn is, you know, how motivated are they? How excited are they to go out and play this game? Now, one of the things I think could be an interesting side note to this one, you know, when you look at the college football playoff, you look at the ranking system and, you know, I mean, I know that the top 25 doesn't necessarily mean anything, but that preseason perception is very important for you when it comes to the college football playoff committee, because it buys you some mistakes. If you're a top five or top 10 team coming into the season, you trip up early on or you trip up in the middle of the year, you know, people are still going to remember, well, this is a team that was supposed to do great things. They have a high ceiling. You know, maybe they look in a little bit more favorable of a light as that committee starts talking. For Auburn here, you know, normally a loss to a group of five team would really be detrimental to you coming into the following season from a preseason standpoint. But Central Florida is a top 10 team here. So it kind of makes me wonder if Auburn doesn't win this game, and they certainly may not, you know, how far does perception actually fall in a year where Central Florida was a 12-0 team, was, you know, a high scoring team, a high flying team, the teams that people like to write stories about. You know, how much does this hurt Auburn to actually lose this game? Is that a consideration going forward? Does it matter to the players? I don't know. But that is something that I try to look at here when you've got these Power 5 versus Group of 5 games is, you know, that's kind of an element of motivation as well.
It is, and I'm glad you're bringing this up. As we transition, we're wrapping up the season here. There's one thing that people overreact to in the marketplace. It's bowl games, because that's the lasting impression that you have of that particular team. And you know, if I'm looking to buy Auburn, and I kind of am, to be honest with you, I think Stidham is, you know, I probably bought into him 1 year too early. But I wouldn't mind catching some extra value on Auburn in the marketplace, whether it be the futures or the season win totals, them losing this game. So I don't think it hurts them like a typical, you know, game would against a group of five team, because Central Florida is getting all this press. You're exactly right there. But it'll definitely hurt them a little bit in the marketplace just because the public overreacts to what they just saw last. So I'm glad you're bringing that up. And as we, you know, talk some and do some off-season podcasts and all that, I think that's one of the points you're going to hear me drive home is, you know, don't overreact to what you saw in the bowl game, especially with bowl games being higher variance. And a lot of times bowl games offering up teams that aren't motivated to be there. It's not necessarily a true reflection of what that team was all about the entire season.
All right, we'll move on to the Citrus Bowl here, a game that we can probably spend just a couple of seconds on, because you played LSU at the 2.5. You wanted to get out there in front of the key number. Now we're sitting on 3 with extra juice pretty much across the market. Matchbook, the exchange, which is one of the sharper offshores out there, already dealing 3.5. Nobody else has gotten to that point yet, but it certainly looks like we will be soon enough. Has anything changed your mind at all about this game that's happened, you know, over the last few weeks?
What last night's news changed the little things for me. I'm a little bit worried about LSU's frame of mind on offense, because it looks like they're going to part ways with their offense coordinator, Matt Canada, after the season. That news broke last night that he's going to be gone after the bowl game. That affects it, because I kind of hark back to LSU Notre Dame from 3 years ago, where John Chavis had 1 foot out the door. I was leaving to go to Texas A&M, and Notre Dame's offense really took advantage of a pretty good LSU defense. So that's a concern that I have right now, and I might actually, if it goes at 3.5, play back a little bit in Notre Dame. But here's what I do know about Notre Dame. Number one, they struggle to throw the football, and they're missing 3 of their top 4 wide receivers and some significant strong trends here. I am very familiar with the Notre Dame program growing up a fan. They haven't won a New Year's Day bowl game since January 94. They're 0-9 straight up, 1-8 against the number. Away from home against top 20 teams, they're 0-10 straight up, 3-7 against the number. And Brian Kelly is a terrible bowl coach, 2-7 against the number. Don't need to say anything more. Very happy with my 2.5 ticket, although a little bit concerned there if an LSU offense is a little bit distracted with an outgoing offensive coordinator.
That's an excellent point there with Matt Canada, who was the highest paid offensive coordinator in college football. Didn't get along with Ed Orgeron. You have to wonder if LSU, you know, wishes that they had a do-over with the Orgeron hire. That's something that we can talk about over the offseason here and sort of speculate on that. But Matt Canada will coach the bowl game, but he is on his way out the door. So, you know, like you said, that is a pretty big consideration there with that one. All right, let's go to game 271, 272 here. This one is the Rose Bowl College Football Playoff semifinal. Georgia takes on Oklahoma. This number is anywhere from Georgia minus 1.5 to Georgia minus 2.5 out there. If you remember way back when this number opened, Oklahoma was a short favorite. That didn't last very long, but we haven't gotten all the way up to 3 yet. So, Brad, what do you think about this one?
I don't agree with the line move here and all the money on Georgia. I just think Oklahoma's got the more experience as far as playoffs. They were in it a couple years ago. I know Riley, you know, Lincoln Riley is coaching his first bowl game, so it'll be interesting to see how he preps his team with an extra month to prepare. But from all indicators, I mean, Lincoln Riley is going to be a future superstar when it comes to the coaching ranks. You know, I have a significant edge at quarterback here with experience Baker Mayfield and against a true freshman in Jake Fromm. And look, I think what gets overplayed, it was a significant trend in the 90s and the early part of the 2000s is, you know, always fade the Heisman Trophy winner. And I guess there was some affirmation last year with Lamar Jackson having a bad bowl game. But that trend just hasn't been and hasn't held true here the last 10 bowl games if you look through that. So I think there's a little bit of overreaction there. I'm worried about the matchup as far as Georgia having not seen a particular offense like Oklahoma almost all year. I mean, they really benefited from a very weak SEC East this year. We saw that with Missouri going down to a Big 12 team. I'm leaning with Oklahoma, and I'm betting Oklahoma on the money line here. And Oklahoma has been one of those rare teams that has had a lot of success against SEC teams, 4-0 straight up and against the spread, bowl wins over Alabama, bowl win over Auburn last year. I think the Sooners are a very confident team with the experience edge. Give me them plus the points and on the money line.
This may be a simplistic point of view for me, but when you look at the line moves here in both of these games, Alabama up to 3, some shops now dealing extra juice on the Crimson Tide as well. This move here with Georgia going up, is that SEC bias still out there? And if so, I mean, does the conference deserve it anymore, given what some of the other conferences have been able to do with their top teams?
I don't think they deserve it off of what I've seen this year. I mean, the conference is not what it was 5-10 years ago. It just isn't. And particularly the coaching's not there. I mean, Urban Meyer's gone, James Franklin's gone, Mark Richt's gone. Even Les Miles, to a lesser extent, is gone. I think Kirby Smart's a future superstar, but I'm not seeing it, and I'm not buying it. And we'll see. I mean, the problem is right now as we're taping this, we haven't seen too many SEC teams play. Well, we'll definitely see that, and that's something to take into consideration as we lead up to it, and we see a lot more Power 5 teams playing bowl games. You see it in the marketplace. If a conference starts looking a little bit weak, and we saw that with the MAC, I mean, those lines are going to move either for them or against them, and that'll be something I'll like to look at as the SEC and Big 12 play a lot more bowl games. If one or the other is looking really strong, then maybe I can understand the line moves, but if the SEC's not looking – it's all, powerful self, then I really, can't explain either line move here in the semifinals.
All right, one more game to talk about here on the board. That is Alabama-Clemson, All-State Sugar Bowl. Third meeting for these two teams. The first two games have been absolutely fantastic. I would expect nothing less here in this one. Alabama, 3-point favorite. What do you think, Brad?
Yeah, I like Oklahoma as my favorite side or total right now in the playoffs. Semifinals, but if I'm going to lean and I'm not going to have a big bet, I'm going to take Clemson plus the 3. Number one, I don't think there's a coaching mismatch here. And let's talk about the Alabama coaching staff and what's happened to it here the last couple of years. You lose a guy like Kirby Smart a couple of years ago, one of the better defensive coordinators in college football. Okay, you replace him with Jeremy Pruitt, who I thought was a slight notch down, although I do really like Jeremy Pruitt. But Jeremy Pruitt's also splitting time right now between this defense coordinator job and the Tennessee job. So that's a negative. You lose one of the better offensive play callers in all of college football in Lane Kiffin. I think it's a step down in Brian Dabble so far, what we've seen this year. You also lose, Steve Sarkisian was an offensive quality control analyst on this staff last year. He's now the offense coordinator for the Falcons. You lose Mario Cristobal on the offensive line. So I don't think that this huge coaching edge for Alabama, not just at the head coaching, but also at the assistant level, just isn't there. Dabo Sweeney, the last 5 years, has had one of the more remarkable postseason runs in the history of college football. 7 times. He's 7-0 against the spread, 6-1 straight up, all in the underdog role. two covers against Nick Saban. I got the best unit on the field, in my opinion, the Clemson defensive line. I got a Clemson team that handled their business quite well, the defending champ this year. I mean, if Kelly Bryant isn't on a gimpy leg and missing the second half of the Syracuse game, Clemson goes unbeaten. So I know the revenge factor is getting played up, and I know the sharp money is on Alabama here, but now I'm catching a full field goal. I like the Tigers plus the points.
My hope, and I get everything you say makes a lot of sense. I love Dabo Swinney. I hate saying that as a Gamecocks fan, but the dude's just awesome, not just as a coach, but also as a person. And he's done phenomenal things with this Clemson team. In the two meetings that Clemson has played against Alabama, Deshaun Watson, when they won last year, 36 of 56, 420 yards, 3 touchdowns. When they lost, 30 of 47, 405 yards, 4 touchdowns and a pick. Kelly Bryant doesn't have that dynamic. He cannot throw the way that Deshaun Watson can on this Alabama defense. That's the biggest difference between the previous two meetings as far as I'm concerned. So while I love Dabo Swinney, I think Brent Venables does a hell of a job. I think Clemson, you know, obviously is here to stay. I mean, you look at the recruiting classes they've had over the last few years, the defenses that they've had. This is a legitimate Titan in college football. The problem is, the way they've moved the ball on Alabama the last 2 years has been to throw it. I don't think Kelly Bryant can do that. Maybe he can. Maybe I'm proven wrong. But I think that's why Alabama advances. But it's not something I love putting my money on. This is a game that I'd almost rather watch without any kind of financial investment or maybe look to do some in-game trading. But this is one that I just want to watch and enjoy. And I think that we should get the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And again, I'm not going to have a big bet. And you're exactly right. If you're wanting to back Clemson, your biggest question, Kelly Bryant, he's going to have to throw the football, because if he can't, you're dead in the water if you have a Clemson ticket. And that's why, you know, in-game live betting offers up some unique opportunities where you can see how he's handling himself. And, I mean, 13 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, not going to move the needle when Deshaun Watson, you know, previous couple of years had more than 30 touchdown passes entering that game. So, you're exactly right. That's the one that gives me pause. And obviously the money being on Alabama also gives me a little bit of pause there, but should be a great one. Should have two great semifinals. We haven't necessarily seen great semifinals so far outside of the Alabama-Ohio State game a few years ago. They've all been blowouts. So from a fan aspect, I'm hoping just for a couple of competitive games on New Year's Day.
Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. What's going on over at the website right now, man?
Yeah, BradPowersSports.com. If you want to check out the newsletter, which we talk about each and every week here, you can get the rest of the season for $30. Not only the rest of the College Bowl actions, where I give a star-rated play on every single game and a complete extended bowl write-up on every single game. You see what I bet in each particular bowl game. But also, you got last week of the NFL. You got the entire NFL playoffs. You want to get it emailed to you each and every week. It's just $30 all the way through the Super Bowl. $30 for the Powers Picks newsletter. Go to BradPowersSports.com.
And you can follow Brad on Twitter at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, thank you so much for joining us, man. Happy New Year, buddy, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good. Take care, my friend.
Good stuff there on today's show from Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. Well, I'm really looking forward to this one here. Always good to get some new voices on Bang the Book Radio. We're joined now by @whale_capper on Twitter, who goes by White Whale. So what the hell, that's what I'm going to call him. Mr. Whale, how's it going today, man?
It's going fantastic. How are you doing this morning, Adam?
I'm doing very well. Appreciate your time. Good to get you on the show here. I know that you've got a very strong Twitter following. You've had a lot of success in both the NFL and the NBA, so that's what we're going to chat about here on today's show. And obviously, with this being week 17 of the NFL, it's maybe not the most ideal time to get you on the show here, and we'll see what we can do in future seasons. But this is a very difficult week to handicap.
It's the toughest. I think you pretty much have to throw totals out the window this week, because God knows what you're going to get in terms of coaches' approach to resting their players and how many teams are just trying to run out the clock on the season. So I'm probably going to stay off of all of the totals this week. I usually try to have a pretty balanced card between sides and totals, but I'm probably going to have a late card anyway, and I'm definitely not looking for many overs or unders. When it comes to sides, the difference is usually made by, you know, who's going after bonuses, who's trying to make milestones, who's trying to finish at the top of the statistical categories and, you know, receiving yards, rushing yards, passing yards, things like that. And so, you know, in terms of evaluating value on sides, you kind of have to really, really, really do your homework, figure out who's going to get the most playing time, who's going after, you know, who's going after big, big bonuses. And I wish I could tell you I had a whole lot of angles on that right now, but there's still very little information out there as far as, you know, who we're going to see get significant playing time this week. So week 17 is by far the toughest, toughest week of handicapping the NFL, in, you know, in my opinion.
Well, and for those that play daily fantasy, try to find some information there on who's up for bonuses and who can, you know, reach some of those milestones. I know that's something I talked about in my MLB daily fantasy article late in the year. Those guys looking for nice round numbers, you know, 30 home runs, 100 RBI, 300 average, all that. Guys that are highly motivated late in the year, no matter what situations their respective teams are in. Obviously, you get that in the NFL here as well with guys looking for contracts the next season. But you know, I think one of the biggest angles you can look at here in week 17, and I kind of mentioned this earlier on in the week on one of the shows, is that it's almost like the preseason. You have the coaches being very open about what their plans are, about who's going to play, how long they're going to play. Obviously, we've seen some adjustments out there in the marketplace. Kansas City saying they're not playing anybody. The Rams saying that they're not playing anybody. We've seen over a touchdown line move from the open in that game. So you do have that element in play a little bit in that the coaches are telling you what's going on. So is this maybe a better week to look at some derivative options or live betting?
Oh, yes. Oh, live betting especially. If you could, you're going to see some second half lines that are kind of based on sort of the traditional season-long models that don't factor that stuff in, for sure. You're going to see live options where, I mean, a great example may be like Carolina Panthers, right? Like that line suggests that you're going to have a pretty competitive game. Carolina maybe has less to play for than Atlanta because they can't do much about their seeding unless like a million awesome things work to their advantage. But, you know, if Minnesota's, you know, if Minnesota handles their business in the morning and, you know, and you know, the Saints are taking care of the business versus the Bucks, you know, there's really no reason for Ron Rivera to keep his guys, you know, going full throttle in the second half of that game. And you might see, you know, some line value, you may see some live value open up on the Falcons. You might see something open up on an under or an interesting total somewhere in game. So those angles are going to be, all going to be wide open. And actually thinking back into years past, the most success I've had in week 17 has absolutely been finding second half unders for games where you knew that the coaches were both just going to run out the clock on the season. So that's a great angle.
Yeah. And it certainly does make a lot of sense too, especially when you talk about a Carolina Atlanta situation. I mean, whether they see it during halftime or whether the score is up somewhere, you know, at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, they're going to know what's going on with New Orleans. I mean, if they want to find out, they're going to find out. Even if Ron Rivera tries to keep it from them or whatever else, it's also in Ron Rivera's best interest to know what's going on. Because if New Orleans goes out 17-0 or something like that, I don't know what his plan is with Cam Newton. I haven't read anything about it yet. But, you know, if New Orleans is up 17-0, Cam Newton shouldn't play at all in the second half and probably shouldn't play from that point on. Christian McCaffrey, put him in bubble wrap, protect him. Greg Olsen, same thing. You know, Luke Kuechly, Thomas Davis, no reason those guys should play the second half. And I like what you said there that, you know, a lot of times these live betting or the second half things, it's just a chart or a formula or an algorithm, something like that. You don't actually have, in most cases, people putting these lines up live, people sitting there watching all these games, making adjustments. It's going to be based on the pregame line, the handle, you know, and then, of course, whatever the formula says for them to put up. So, you know, Carolina's second half line with Derek Anderson at quarterback and none of the skill position players playing may be the same as the number would be with Cam Newton playing, because they're not capable of making that adjustment at the halftime. So again, you want to be making sure that you're watching very, very closely for those things.
Absolutely agreed. And I think there's probably line value in Atlanta -4. I could completely see a scenario where by the time that game kicks off, if Minnesota takes care of business in the morning and it's pretty clear that Carolina can't even really play for a bye and they're going to need 18 things to go in their favor to get a home game, I could see Carolina, you know, I could see the market kind of respond to that and this minus four drift out to, like, say, minus six or minus seven even by the time this kicks off.
That's an interesting point, and I want to elaborate on that a little bit, because with the previous guest, Brad Powers, we talked on last week's show about getting Kansas State minus 2.5 for the Cactus Bowl as a speculatory grab just in case Josh Rosen came out and said, yeah, I'm not playing. Well, of course, that's exactly what happened. Kansas State wound up being a 6.5-point favorite, so if you grabbed the 2.5, you had 4 points of line value right away. So that's something in Week 17 that I guess you can afford to do, and in-game running allows you to, you know, buy off or limit your exposure if you want to. But I think you're right in that, you know, grabbing Atlanta at some of – there's a rogue 3.5 at the Greek, for example. Maybe you can find one out there at a brick and mortar in Las Vegas. But even taking a 4, you know, I mean, what does this number become live if Carolina has nothing to play for in the second half? You know, this number may be 14 or something like that in the second half if they – pack things away, and you're sitting there with a full game minus 4. There's a lot of value in that.
I 100% agree. Carolina, I mean, to take this one step further, Carolina needs a blow, man. They've been playing really hard games. They've been playing tough competition. You could see they were getting a little tired in that game last week against Tampa Bay. They should have beaten Tampa Bay handily, but they needed some late magic to secure that win. You know, these guys could use a little bit of a blow. I think Ron Rivera knows that. I think he knows he's got his work cut out for him going on the road in the playoffs here, but he knows that he's got one of the more experienced teams in the playoffs and probably thinks that that people are sleeping on them, and he can get his team up and motivated to do something good. So I think keeping his team healthy and rested is going to be his primary goal coming into and out of this week. So that's a great look. And I mean, my good buddy Andy, who I do the podcast with, the Deep Dive, he was, you know, we were chatting as they were opening up lines for this weekend, and he did some of the speculative play on San Francisco. We were looking at the, you know, at the motivations and the angles here, and we thought, you know, hey, for what purpose would McVay, you know, force this and try to win this game to get the 3 seed so he could go to Minnesota in the 2 seed. He probably feels like he has a better matchup against Philadelphia anyway. And obviously you can't expect that, you know, you're going to be able to control your destiny. If you're the 4 seed, you're going to end up wherever you end up, depending on the other wild card outcome. But you know, it would make more sense if I was McVay and I was saying, you know, if I was the Rams, I would be more interested in playing Philly than I would be playing Minnesota. So in the second round of the playoffs, that is. So it kind of was an obvious, and you could see it coming, that they were going to, you know, pull some of their starters and probably not give us an honest effort in this game. On top of the fact that here you're playing San Francisco, a team that, as you look into the future, you're going to have some very tough competition between LA and San Francisco for the NFC West for years to come. So it didn't make sense that you would necessarily put your best game plan out there, expose all of your new and innovative offensive tactics to your future toughest competition. So this was an easy one to see coming a mile away. And my buddy Andy definitely was like, why is San Francisco plus anything here in this money line on the open, and grab that and now has a chance to come back on plus money for the Rams. So remember this, file this away for next year. Stay close when they open these lines for week 17 and try to do what you can to speculate just like you would for the Bulls, depending on who's going to play.
One of the things we talked about on yesterday's show is the game between the Texans and the Colts and how you have two questionable coaching situations. Chuck Pagano probably gone. Bill O'Brien probably not gone. I know I didn't list this game in the outline that I sent you this morning here, so I apologize for that. But
no,
it is something
okay.
I was looking at a little bit here this morning. The NFC North matchup, 303-304 between Green Bay and Detroit. We know Green Bay is going to make some coaching changes. They'll probably fire Dom Capers. Mike McCarthy's probably safe. I don't know if he should be, but he probably is. Detroit, on the other hand, there's a lot of question marks regarding the future job security for Jim Caldwell. And this is a situation that you have to try to read, not just in week 16 or week 17, but in week 16 and 15 probably as well, is that, you know, what do you look for in terms of trying to gauge whether or not a team is going to come out and fight for a coach or if they're just going to play out the string?
Man, looking for signals to help understand that is extremely tough. You pretty much have to just take a leap of faith if you're going to try to bet on that angle. But you're absolutely right. I mean, we saw it with the Giants and Ben McAdoo like five times this season. The defense made a very clear – sent a very clear message to management, we do not want to play for this guy. And so you kind of have to read – I like to look at what the beat writers are quoting players in the locker room, especially on the defense with the defense, because the defense always kind of has – it's a tighter – group, right? Like they're a unit as opposed to the offense, which really revolves around the quarterback. And so you want to hear what, you know, obviously if there's a quarterback who has a lot of sway, you want to know what they have to say about the situation. And if there's a defense that has kind of a prevailing opinion, you want to know what they have to say about it. You're going to get that from the beat writers. And if you have any sense of we're done fighting for this guy and we're going to send a message to the coaching staff and management that we want a new coach, then they're going to do it week 17. And you know, it doesn't always work out. And these two games you brought up, I could see both teams trying to send a message to their management. I agree with you. Pagano is, this is probably his last game as a head coach in the NFL. I think actually I disagree with you on Bill O'Brien. I don't think they're going to bring him back in 2018. I think the writing was on the wall last year that the ownership and management doesn't really have the same vision for the future of the franchise that Bill O'Brien does. And now they have Deshaun Watson, who you're going to be able to get a really good coaching prospect that wants to come and coach Deshaun Watson and wants to, you know, have this defense with all these blue chip players. This is probably one of the easier jobs to fill if you're out there trying to recruit innovative minds in the NFL, which a lot of teams are going to be doing. There's going to be like seven or eight coaching vacancies this year, and I do think Houston's going to move on from Bill O'Brien. And what's funny is you look at the quotes from Bill O'Brien this week. He feels like he is sucking up to Jim Irsay. Like he wants this indie job, maybe. So I'm interested to see how that plays out and what kind of what kind of chumminess we see between the Bill O'Brien and the Colts this week. Because if I didn't know any better, I would, just reading the quotes, I would think Bill O'Brien knows he's on his way out. And he's trying to pave the way for another head coaching spot in Indianapolis with Andrew Luck as his quarterback next year.
Well, and two of the other games that we're going to talk about here a little bit more in depth have different coaching situations. Beginning with game 301-302, Cincinnati takes on Baltimore. Baltimore, they're, what, 31st in the league in yards per play, and they're out here laying yet another big number this week. But Marvin Lewis is done in Cincinnati, and we know that. We've known that now for a few weeks' time. The Bengals did step up last week at home and beat the Lions and officially removed them from playoff contention. But now this is Marvin Lewis's swan song. You know, this one's not at home. It's on the road against a division opponent in Baltimore. But this is it. This is the last game for this guy. And who knows, you know, where he'll wind up going next year. Was last week the last stand for the Bengals in terms of stepping up for this guy? Or do you think that they do it again here this week and cover a number against a team that, you know, much like last week, probably shouldn't be favored by this much?
Yeah, I'm not expecting Cincinnati to show up in a way that they in any way threaten to win this game. I think last week was their finale for Lewis, and it was at home, so it made more sense, and it was against a team that, you know, had vulnerabilities. And you know, I don't think we've seen the best that Baltimore has yet. I think we know that their defense is legitimate, and they have some pieces on offense that are starting to click. And while I would never advocate laying 10 points in a divisional matchup, because it just feels these teams know each other well enough that you could just see a close, grinded out kind of game. This is probably it for Marvin Lewis in Cincinnati, and I don't know that there's much that they can do to get him a win on his way out the door, which means you're literally saying, okay, well, they're going to keep it within a touchdown or they're going to get a backdoor cover. And I don't know, too sketchy to get involved with from my standpoint.
Now, the other game I want to focus on here, game 327-328, Arizona and Seattle. Here you have a case where it's largely up to the head coach. If Bruce Arians wants to come back, the Cardinals will probably welcome him back, even though there was a report last week that the two sides agreed to part ways. He said that's not the case. He just wants to decide if he wants to coach next year or not. Seattle obviously has some incentive here. They need to win this game and get an Atlanta loss to get into the playoffs. They're a 9.5-point favorite. But for Arizona, you know, you sort of wonder what the mindset is of the players. I mean, this is a team that, you know, does have a lot of veteran leadership on both sides of the ball. But, you know, does what they do in this game have any tangible impact on what Bruce Arians decides to do? I don't really know. So that kind of puts them almost in limbo this week.
Yeah, it certainly does. If I'm the Cardinals, I'm probably afraid to lose Arians, to be honest. I look across the league at some of the next tier of up-and-coming talent in the head coaching ranks, and it does not look promising. I mean, you're almost certainly going to be either taking a huge risk with a young coach who's unproven, or you're going to try to, you know, recycle one of the retreads who are, you know, uninspiring. I like Bruce Arians. You know, I think he's a great motivator and a pretty impressive offensive mind. I didn't love the roster construction this year for the Cardinals, and I think that with a few tweaks, they can do a little bit better next year. I don't know. The future in Arizona looks really rocky because of how the Rams have emerged, and late in the season, the Niners have emerged. It's a real tough thing to speculate on what the Cardinals are going to do in terms of their motivational angles coming into this game and trying to, you know, show Bruce that they want him to come back next year, the players at least. Can almost say that this is a tight rivalry. I mean, these teams, there's no love lost here, believe it or not. The Cardinals play the Seahawks extremely tough, you know, regardless of whether or not there were playoff implications. And I almost feel like that the player to player, or the player versus team kind of motivational aspects may trump anything that would come up in terms of like the future of the franchise and the future of the coach. And I'm expecting the Cardinals to come up and play a pretty pretty motivated effort out of this squad. I'm a little nervous because it's not clear who the quarterback's going to be for the Cardinals, and it's tough. You know, I think the line drifting from 7 out to 10 is obviously a little disconcerting, but at the same time, 10 points in a divisional matchup where you have a Cardinals team that, you know, they have nothing to lose going out there and trying to spoil Seahawks who they don't like. It's a good angle. I like the Cardinals to keep this thing close. And Seattle, we saw the effort that they gave against Dallas last week was impressive, but the idea that they're going to be able to duplicate that in back-to-back weeks, it's not obvious to me. So I'll probably be getting involved back in the Cardinals in some way, shape, or form this week. It's maybe another one to look live. I mean, if Seattle scores early, you could see the market really flip in their favor even more so and think, okay, well, the Cardinals are going to quit here. But I wouldn't expect them to quit even down early. I would expect the Cardinals to fight and try to score and try to claw their way back into this. So you may be able to get an even larger line live if Seattle looks good early, which they rarely do, but you never know.
Yeah, I mean, I would certainly expect the Cardinals not to quit, because if you go 7-9 by NFL rule, you're forced to hire Jeff Fisher. So, you know, they certainly don't want that to happen by falling off here in the second half. Now,
right.
Here's a really interesting game for a lot of different reasons. Jacksonville and Tennessee. This is probably my favorite game of the weekend from a handicapping standpoint. I almost like, you know, having to dig through and figure out all these angles and all this stuff more so than seeing the money head into my bankroll, just because I that's what I love about this industry. I love being able to study these matchups and try to put the pieces of the puzzle together. This game is fascinating. Obviously for Tennessee, a lot on the line. If they win, they're in. They're a field goal favorite against Jacksonville. Jacksonville, on the other hand, you know, going to the playoffs, hosting a playoff game for the first time since 2000, and they have not played well down the stretch. So Doug Marrone can't afford to rest his starters here. And that's why we've seen this number adjust from 6 down to 3. he needs to get some kind of chemistry going, get something going in the right direction for this team as they head into the playoffs. So they have a lot of incentive here. It doesn't look like they do because they're already in and they've already won the division. But, you know, there's a lot on the line for them in terms of smoothing out the rough edges for their playoff game next week. And Tennessee, like I said, win and you're in. So this is probably the purest handicap of the weekend, I would think.
100% agreed with you. I love the way you set that up. The last year, there's almost a perfect analog to what happened last season as well. And it was the only kind of full unit pregame play I made week 17 last season, and it was the Giants at the Redskins. The narrative all week was the Giants have nothing to play for. The Redskins win and they're in this game. You know, this is you know, the Giants are going to rest all their players if they go down early, like they had, you know. But lo and behold, we knew that the Giants had kind of, they had made their quotes, you know, their quotes throughout the week were pretty clear. They weren't considering this a throw-in game. They had lost week 16. They felt like they needed to get a little momentum going into the playoffs. And whenever the New York Giants have had success in the playoffs, it's been because they've had some late season wins and they've carried that momentum in and won on the road. And so they were trying to replicate that feeling and that energy. And so you knew it was coming that they weren't going to lay down against the Redskins. And here they were like, I don't know, maybe they opened as 3-point dogs and it drifted all the way out to 10. And I was like, this is ludicrous, man. These guys aren't going to quit. They think they need to win this game to have the momentum to be anything in the playoffs. They're going to try hard. And sure enough, they outright won. And that you can see it coming a mile away. And I think that we're looking at a similar situation here. The fact that Coughlin is in the front office and has this kind of mindset notwithstanding, I do think that the Jaguars feel like they need a win. They need to get their momentum going in the right direction before they go into this playoffs. I don't think you want to have back-to-back losses and then, you know, face a team that's played their way in, especially if that team is the team that just beat you week 17. The scenario that scares me if I'm the Jaguars is – we lost to Tennessee week 2. This team knows us well. We've had a tough time beating this team historically in the tenure of most of the players that are here, and we couldn't beat them twice this year. And here they go. They are now the sixth seed coming into our house for wild card weekend. Can we beat them this time? And I don't think you want to have to face those questions for the media. I don't think you want your players thinking about that stuff. I think you want to put Tennessee out of their misery this week. If you're Jacksonville, I think you want to get a win, get some momentum going into the playoffs, and then, you know, you can talk yourself up to whoever your wild card opponent is, presumably the LA Chargers. I got my fingers crossed, at least, that it's the Chargers, so we'll see.
Well, and that's interesting, too, because then you'd have a Chargers team coming cross-country after having to win in Week 17 and get some help to get in. That creates a pretty bad situational spot for Los Angeles coming all the way out to Florida, so in that respect, too, I mean, you know, there's a little bit more value. Of course, you know, you have the Gus Bradley angle and all that. But, you know, that's a matchup that's probably better for Jacksonville, even though I think the Chargers are a better team than the Titans because they're a little bit more versatile and they have a much, much, much better defense than Tennessee does. But still, yeah, I mean, if you're talking about a team that you've not had much success against, a team you've lost to twice this season, you got to play them again. And you're a team that's not accustomed to going to the playoffs. And something I talk about a lot here on this show is that it's great to have that one-off year or two straight years where you make the playoffs and you get expectations and this and that. It's another thing to live up to those and actually make that the culture that you have. And for Jacksonville here late in the year, it just sort of feels like they're not embracing success all that well. And like you said, this is a week for them to actually show that they can do that and give themselves a little bit of positive momentum going into next weekend.
100, yeah, I agree 100%. You saw after they clinched, they kind of fell apart mentally in that game against San Francisco, guys fighting each other on the sidelines, making the same old dumb mistakes that we saw them make before they kind of had their, you know, everything came together for them this season. Yeah, if you're Doug Marrone, if you're Tom Coughlin in the front office, I think you're like, you know, we are going to use this as an opportunity to get everybody rowing the boat in the same direction. We're going to put Tennessee out of their misery so we don't have to face them a third time this season. And then, hey, you never know. I mean, Oakland could surprise and you know, the mini black hole in L.A. could – the Chargers could do something chargery, and you could get to face the Bills. So, you know, there's – there's more at stake here than I think people are realizing. And this all goes into a whole different point. I really do not like Mike Mularkey, and I think his game planning and his in-game decision-making is among the worst of the head coaches in the league. And so even beyond just if Jags are particularly motivated and have it come out with a real game plan and play their starters all four quarters, even if they don't, I'm not feeling too bad fading a Mike Mularkey team, even when they absolutely need a win to keep their playoff hopes alive.
All right, let's transition over to the hardwood here for a few minutes and talk a little bit of NBA. And for those that don't know, @whale_capper posts his NBA projections out there with the final scores that you have in mind for the games coming up that evening. So I don't want you to pull the curtain too far back. We don't need to see everything. But what sorts of statistics or other types of things do you have there, in whatever model spits out the projections for you?
So I handicap tennis, NFL, and NBA, and I use numerical models in all three, but in very different ways. And NBA is probably the one where I lean the most on the numbers, because it lends itself to that the most easily. There are so many games, there's so much data, and you can really do some pretty innovative statistical analyses, back calculate how to appropriately capture team level performance once you have a pretty solid statistical database to work with. And here we are now in December. We've had, most teams have played 30, 35 games, or actually, I guess we're up to like about 35, 38 games. And so you have a pretty good idea of who these teams are, statistically. And from, I try to keep it pretty simple. I like to look at, efficiency statistics. And I like to look at, effectively average offensive and defensive efficiency and pace adjusted for opponent. So we're trying to come up with basically a solid baseline projection of how a team would perform on a given night in terms of they're expected to have this offensive efficiency, this defensive efficiency, and they'll probably be this many possessions. And you can combine all these in a really simple way to get it. And then that's a reasonable baseline. So in a neutral situation on a neutral court, we'll say the Rockets and the Celtics might be expected to score something like Rockets, 110, Celtics 108 or something like that. And that's just combining offensive, defensive efficiency and pace. Now, having a good baseline is really just step one. Because in the NBA, what tends to matter, especially once we get into this part of the season, I'll say this, numerical modeling and all this stuff, it works well in certain portions of the season, and it works really poorly in other portions of the season, I've found over the last several years. I'm kind of mired in the part of the season where it's not working very well. It was electric in November when you had relatively healthy squads. Teams had kind of established their identity and you knew what their approaches were more or less. In December, things get real dicey because you have lots of different rest patterns because coaches are dealing with players who are starting to get beat up and you have surprise injuries and surprise rest and teams are experimenting with new ideas about how they want to run their offense and defenses. They're starting to practice certain adjustments in game, and that stuff doesn't necessarily come through when all you're doing is looking at team level statistics. And so it's really tough this time of year to kind of use this model-based approach to find value in sides and totals. But again, once you have a baseline, then you can kind of go after how do I make appropriate adjustments to this? This key player is out. I'm gonna turn the offensive and defensive knobs up and down one standard deviation. This team is on back-to-back nights, so I'm gonna turn the pace knob up or down, or turn the defensive. You know, so basically, you can kind of turn the knobs to count for the situations, the injuries, and whatever else you feel like is an important situational factor to account for. And then when it's all said and done, I look at what the sides and you know, where I have a, you know, more than a three-pointer edge on sides and totals, and try to winnow it down to say five plays a night. And you know, it's a grind, but is you know, I'm looking for 3-2 every night for the whole season, and then we'll make money in the long term.
Yeah, I like that that's the approach that you take, and I like that I can sort of expand a little bit on that with you, because when it comes to baseball, I'm very analytics-based. I love looking at sabermetrics. I'm huge into those numbers. When it comes to the other sports, not so much, in part because I just don't have as much interest in them as I do in baseball, but also because I apply different handicapping techniques, specifically in the NBA, a lot of situational stuff, looking at back-to-backs, threes and fours, four and sixes, all that type of thing. So –
nice.
One of the things that's challenging about that is that it's hard to quantify those things. You know, how much does a back-to-back actually mean? Is a back-to-back worse when you're leaving Toronto and you have to go through customs when you leave town, or, you know, customs when you get to the next city? You know, is that worse than going from, you know, New York to Indiana, or, you know, Indiana to Dallas, something where you've got longer travel? You know, all of that stuff is kind of subjective in nature. So, you know, it's hard for me sometimes to go about it that way, because I'm so analytics based in some sports and less so in others. But what you do to counteract that is, you know, you'll adjust your pace expectations a little bit, and that's going to change, you know, pretty much the whole formula, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, and I agree, it's subjective. I like to have like what I think of as a good baseline, cuz you know, if I'm let's say I projected 8 scores for a regular night of basketball. Let's say I got all 8 of them exactly right. It's not because I figured out the magic formula whatsoever. It's that I had a good baseline and I made the correct, I guessed at the correct adjustments to make for each team, right? Like there's a lot of subjectivity in Torrey. Okay, well, Chris Paul's out for the Rockets tonight. Like, how much does that affect their offensive and their defensive efficiency? Like, you don't know that, you know, a priori. So you're going to have to make some guess at the adjustment, and you could guess exactly right, or you could be way off. But, you know, as long as you're doing it in sort of a system-oriented process, and you can, you know, back-calculate certain things and see where you were right or wrong in your subjective assessment of this stuff, then you can build a mental model as the season goes along and get better and better at doing this. And presumably, over the long run, you're going to get more right than you get wrong.
All right. So let me ask you how you account for this. Then you mentioned the Houston Boston game. And again, I encourage our listeners to go and check out @whale_capper and see his projections for tonight's games when he puts them up. But I like to do more of the technical aspects on this show and give our listeners the tools to do, you know, a lot of these things for themselves and have a good understanding of how the markets work. So Houston plays a very big game tonight against Boston, and it's a big game because it's on TNT. You've got the top two teams in each conference, all that type of thing. It's a game that both teams should be invested in. Tomorrow night, Houston plays in Washington. Now, Washington's a team that's been up and down with John Wall being out, and you know, they've played some big games here of late as well against some really good teams. Then they played some games against some not so good teams. So what would your approach be in a situation like that, with Houston going from playing in Boston on TNT to playing, you know, in Washington tomorrow night on NBA TV? You know, how do you account for that when you've got a model that's largely, you know, based in quantifiable metrics?
Okay, so it's interesting because it's definitely, for me at least, it's definitely team specific. Right. It's like you have to kind of think of, well, what is this, a veteran team? Is it a young team? Is this a team that is struggling right now in the season, or they're like coming on strong? Is this a team that has you know, a lot to play for in these couple games, or are they like coasting right now and just trying to stay at around 500 because they've gotten enough wins early in the season that they know that they're going to the playoffs and they're not really worried about all of this stuff? I think, you know, if you can kind of evaluate those X factors, I guess, then you know where to start on this sort of stuff. And when it comes to, like, I guess a veteran team, and I guess I'll qualify Houston as a veteran team, at least their leaders have been around long enough that you would expect these guys are cagey vets. I actually don't mind backing veteran teams on backs-to-backs. I worry more about young teams because a lot of times they're not as experienced in how to deal with the fatigue of playing on back-to-backs, whereas the veteran teams, even though – and this is kind of counterintuitive because you'd think, well, the veteran teams are older. They're going to have a tougher time coming out two games in a row and playing hard. But they've been doing it their whole careers. They've figured out what they need to do to get their bodies right to be ready for this sort of stuff. Whereas the younger teams are a little bit more, a little less prepared for this. And so, like, Boston's on a back-to-back tonight. They played in Charlotte last night. Now they're home playing the Rockets. It's a relatively young team. I mean, granted, the leaders are Kyrie Irving and Horford have been around a long time, but they're leaning a lot on Jason Tatum. They're leaning a lot on the young crew. On top of that, they're really struggling in the second unit right now for the Celtics. So all of those are factors why I would not be interested in backing the Celtics on a night like tonight. Whereas with Houston on a back-to-back tomorrow in Washington, you know, I'm going to be looking for line value because it's possible that the market can over-adjust for this sort of thing. And, you know, all you're really trying to do is figure out, because everybody knows that it's a back-to-back, right? Presumably that's built into the price a bit. It's built into the line movement once the price is opened. And so you kind of have to figure out, has value opened up here in this spot on the back-to-back because people have have assumed too much or read too much into the angle itself. And ironically, with a veteran team like Houston or OKC or something like that, I am more concerned about them when they have a day off on a long road trip, right? Like when you have these guys on a long road trip and they have a day off in a city and they're veterans, like they're going to go out, they're going to blow off a little steam. They're going to go to their favorite, you know, watering holes in a given city. And then maybe they're less ready to play the next day, right? When it's a back-to-back, maybe they're just like, okay, this is, you know, they're a little more focused on what's going on in present and in the moment on the second night. So those are just kind of some of the X factors that you try to incorporate to gain an edge in the NBA. And, you know, there's so many games and such a long season that, you know, you just have to kind of keep your head down and keep looking for it and not get discouraged when things get tough.
One last thing I want to ask you about here, and then I'll let you go, is the dichotomy between a situation like that with a team like Houston playing, you know, Boston. I mean, that's like I said, it's a big game for them. It's a game that's got a lot of fanfare. Then going and playing Washington, you know, a veteran team is probably going to treat a lot of games similarly, whereas young teams are going to step up for some big opponents and then maybe not step up the next night. Milwaukee's in an interesting spot tonight because they play Minnesota. They're a 3.5-point favorite. Then they go and play Oklahoma City tomorrow night, and the Thunder's really gotten this thing figured out here of late. You know, the big three is starting to share the basketball a little bit more. Things are looking a lot better for them. So what about a situation like that with Milwaukee? You know, how would you incorporate that differently?
Oh, man. Milwaukee is so tough to figure out, not because of the kind of the construction of the roster, but the coaching is not rational. Jason Kidd is not making rational decisions and rational adjustments, in my opinion. He's blown in the wind, and you know he's a Hall of Fame player, you know, fantastic. He is not, in my opinion, a particularly good coach, and so you kind of have to, if you're backing the Bucks, especially as a favorite against a team that's as talented as the Minnesota Timberwolves, you kind of have to get lucky that he's made the right adjustments or he's got the right game plan drawn up for a given game. And, you know, there's you can't understate how good Giannis is. He's, in my opinion, in 2018 season, this season, he's, you know, a top three player in the league with maybe, he's clearly a top five. I like him in the top three with LeBron and Durant. And, you know, I think you can look at, okay, is does he have a favorable matchup against this particular defense where if this is a close game in the fourth quarter, he's going to be able to get his shot off. He's going to be able to score points. He's going to be able to dictate the pace and the style of play. And if you can make a case that he can against, you know, against a team like Minnesota where, you know, Cat's not playing particularly good defense and, you know, there are potentially some decent matchups here for Giannis. I think it's not out of it makes sense at least to look for Milwaukee in a spot like this. Now, knowing that Milwaukee is going to Oklahoma City tomorrow and that they're going to have another tough game, you know, I don't love the matchup as much for Giannis, especially because I mean the between Paul George and Steven Adams, I think you're going to be able to do enough to disrupt Giannis late in the game. And I'll probably be looking for Oklahoma City tomorrow. And you know, I would say Milwaukee probably, I don't know, looking ahead to the game against Oklahoma City is probably like, man, we've been struggling. You know, we beat the Cavs, whoop-de-doo, but then we lost to the Bulls. Like, we need to get a win here. We're hovering around 500. This game here is against Minnesota. I would have circled if I was the Bucks players, and I think we see their best effort tonight against Minnesota, and then maybe they pull back a little bit against Oklahoma City.
Well, good to get you on Bang the Book Radio here. And like I said to our listeners, make sure that you follow him on Twitter, @whale_capper. You do a great podcast of your own, and you're always open to banter with people on Twitter and very approachable in terms of your strategies. So thank you so much for joining us, man. Really appreciate it. And hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you again soon.
Hey, absolutely. It was so great having, thank you for having me on. And I wish you you and your listeners a happy new year.
Same to you, man. Great stuff there on today's show with @whale_capper. Great follow on Twitter. Make sure that you go out there and follow him. One more show coming up in 2017. That will be tomorrow. Westgate Super Contest selection segment with my week 17 picks for the Bang the Book podcast entry. 40-39-1 on the season. So this is a big week for me in hopes of finishing with a winning record. Then we'll also have Brent from DSI Sportsbook for this week's version of the odds report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.